Episode 48 with Greg Heffron.
Where meditation meets daily life, this is the Meditation Freedom Podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Meditation Freedom Podcast. My name is Sika Rode, and this is a podcast about meditation, mindfulness, and contemplative practice, and how to integrate these practices into our daily lives. And one of the aspects of mindfulness and meditation is, of course, our thoughts, which turn into our speech and then finally into our action. Without listening and attentive listening and deep listening, I don't think you can really have mindful or right speech either. That's all part of mindful communication, in my opinion. And I think as you'll hear Greg talk about all of these aspects as well. And so with Greg, we'll be discussing how you can have a good conversation with someone who has a completely different view without it becoming going out of control and escalating. I think we could take just this topic of speech or communication and have multiple episodes with various different teachers about this, because there's so many different kinds of speech, and there's online speech, there's speech in the way we behave and act, there's even voting is reflecting our inner thoughts and is a form of speech. I even look at things, the way we design our world. The world is a reflection of our thinking as well. So, the way you think can reflect out in the world, in what we build and what kind of world that we create. And of course, right now, at the time of this recording, we're in the middle of a national election in the United States, and we have two candidates, one which uses inclusive language, we instead of me, and then the opposite candidate uses the language of separation, creating walls, me and mine. And so it's interesting to watch those two very different approaches and to see how that affects everything from policing to borders to our approaches with immigrants and our way of seeing the world. So it's kind of an interesting case study of speech just to watch the election. Now, of course, a contemplative practice, a meditation practice or mindfulness practice is all about developing compassion and understanding. And so speech is one of the ways that our practice is expressed. So before we move on to the interview with Greg, I just have a couple more quotes that I thought were interesting related to communication. The first quote is from Lama Surya Das. He said, "When we withhold true feelings, protect our emotions, construct false personas to present to the world, we become part of the problem. Hurtful words can come through jokes and reinforce personal alienation and a dualistic view. Is a form of judgment which obscures a higher view and distorts our direct appreciation of how things are." And then here's a quote from Dogen, and he had this to say about the power of kind speech. He said, "Know that kind speech arises from kind heart, and kind heart from the seed of compassionate heart. Ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has the power to turn the destiny of the nation." So I think that's more important right now in this U.S. election than anything, is how someone speaks is going to have an impact on not just this nation, but possibly the whole world. Before we switch over to the interview with Greg Heffron, here's a little bit about Greg. He owns and manages Green Zone Conversions Retreats and is the only certified teacher of mindful communication and authorized by author and Buddhist teacher Susan Chapman. And he's been teaching mindful communication workshops with Susan since 2009 and has been a meditation mindfulness teacher in the Shambhala lineage since 2005. And at that time, he also apprenticed with a mudra space awareness teacher, Craig Smith, and became authorized to teach this unique mind-body meditation technique as well. Greg's background is in creative writing, and he is a student of Sakyong Mikpong Rinpoche. He currently lives in Santa Monica, California. And here is the interview with Craig Heffron. Well, thank you so much, Gregory, for joining me in this podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
How did you get to a meditation or mindfulness practice? Maybe you have a story or something that prompted you to be inspired to join a meditation group or start a meditation practice on your own.
That's an interesting question. Sure. You know, I think like a lot of people, I had, I had a particular situation that was upsetting. You know, it was a big breakup, romantic situation. And, I was in my 20s and, it hit me in just that right way that really shook my world.
Mm-hmm.
And for a variety of reasons, I just didn't have any tools to work with that. I'd done other things. I'd done therapy and, I was very into art and literature and various things, but it hit me so hard enough that I just couldn't quite hold it all together. And I think that's really what motivated me. Like many people, I came to meditation through struggle,
mm-hmm.
And pain and challenge. And luckily, I just knew some people who were in a meditation group, Shambhala Buddhist meditation group, and it struck me as being a sensible thing to experiment with. So they were kind enough to bring me along at one point, and then it's been, 17 years since then.
Yeah. And when you got attracted to that particular tradition, was there anything in particular that stood out to you that helped you with the breakup that you talked about that you found in that practice?
Yeah. I found that there was something about just resting with my emotional experience without having to resolve it, without having to, come up with the big solution, I think that was the most powerful part of the practice for me, even though it was very difficult, quite challenging, I found at the time, especially. I was really, going through a tumultuous time.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I did it, the more I gradually began to gain confidence that it could be done, that I could sit in chaos and confusion and complexity and the richness of my emotional experience, and that it was essentially okay to do that,
mm-hmm.
instead of finding it to be some sort of something that violated the rules of reality. It was reality, and it was okay to feel really tumultuous. And that there's something calming about that. I felt like very soothing and sensible that, I could handle complexity and chaos and not, freak out about it.
Right. And I imagine that with most meditation practices, that is a big part, is to learn to be comfortable with uncertainty and not knowing and not having the answers and like you say, the chaos. And it's not something that most of us can learn in just a few periods of sitting.
Yeah. No, that's true. I think the length of practice, the repetition of practice is crucial. Otherwise it's just sort of like picking up a exercise regimen and doing it for a day or 2 days or something.
Doesn't,
you just feel kind of sore and you don't get very far, but if you keep it up, then something happens.
Yeah. And so how did your practice evolve from there? Did you go into, did you find that it was helping you in other areas of life or in other situations?
Yeah, sure. I found greater ease entering uncertain situations, situations that were unclear, where I felt anxious, And that was really encouraging. I can think of particular situations walking in where I thought, oh boy, I'm really nervous. And then just being able to feel that kind of bubbling energy of anxiety. And then enter anyways with a certain kind of equanimity. That was groundbreaking for me. I never, you know, there was always that sense before that of trying to stuff down my anxiety, you know, and just try and suppress it, which of course only makes it worse.
All right.
And suddenly I found I had a different way to relate that actually allowed me to at least be a little bit calmer. Yeah. So, you know, so then I was inspired as I saw those kinds of effects. And, so, you know, within a year I did a week retreat. And then as time went on over the next few years, I did a month retreat. And, you know, moving forward into the years following, I did longer retreats and, you know, more complex retreats and things like that. And, you know, until it just, the whole process became one of a, like, you know, more of a passion project that I was just really interested to see where this would go. Yeah. And I still feel that way now.
So your continued practice is in part, you're saying, led by curiosity about what else there is to learn about this practice.
Yeah. Which is what else there is to learn about myself, really. You know, I mean, the practice, to some degree, there's more to learn about the practice itself, but really, it's, in a way, it's just applying more and more what I've learned so far, relaxing into the practice and seeing what I can see.
Mm-hmm. Since you're talking about bringing it into your daily life, you got into mindfulness and mindful communication. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit on how you moved towards that direction.
Sure. Well, in 2009, I met Susan Gillis Chapman, who's happens to be a senior teacher in the Shambhala Buddhist tradition. And she was starting into teaching mindful communication, which is something that she has put together, she has conceived. She happens to be a marriage and family therapist of many years, and also a Buddhist teacher who, in the Shambhala tradition, she was actually in charge of one of the longest and most sophisticated retreats in our tradition, the three-year retreat at Gampo Abbey. And Pema Chodron put her in charge of that retreat. So I met her after that period, and she, with her range of experience, you know, she not only as a therapist, but also, you know, she worked in a maximum security prison with sex offenders. She worked in domestic violence shelters, and from this range of experience, she put together a quite unique set of materials that she calls mindful communication, which eventually ended up in the book, The Five Keys to Mindful Communication. So I met her, and she was starting into teaching seminars on this material. And she invited me in to teach a mind-body meditation that I have a background in called Mudra Space Awareness. It comes out of the Tibetan tradition. And, you know, I was going to teach the mind-body component, and then she was going to teach mindful communication. So we did that for a few years. And in that process, I began to learn, you know, what it was she was teaching. I wasn't even sure at first. And it was startling to me, the material she was teaching. It was, you know, based on the one hand in some of the highest Buddhist teachings, but also it was just very pragmatic. It was very useful. You felt like you had a way to understand very simple interactions and situations that before had been, you know, completely confusing.
Yeah, so maybe you can give a couple examples. And also you mentioned mudra.
Mudra is space awareness.
Yeah, and I'm not from that tradition, so maybe you can explain a little bit more what you mean by that as well.
Mudra space awareness is it's a whole other topic. In a way, it would be a whole different discussion, but it's essentially a very acute, experimental, direct practice of experiencing your mind and body together. That comes out of the Tibetan tradition, rooted in Tibetan monastic dance training that the monks would do in the monasteries in Tibet. And in terms of mindful communication, I think the easiest way to understand it is that we're already born with innate sensitivity to understand what's happening in our communication with others. So that's the primary point of view, is not so much that we're mindful communication is building up a set of skills that you'll have to try and remember, you know, and get better at, but actually in some ways it's the opposite process, that we are stripping down the kinds of habits that cover over our innate sensitivity to communication, that actually could allow us to steer very naturally, spontaneously, and accurately in our interactions with others.
Right. So do you have a couple examples of what kind of habits or habit patterns that are covering up what's already innately available to us?
Sure, yeah. You know, I think of one of the ones that causes the most trouble for most of us is not recognizing certain primary states in communication. Like, for example, failing to recognize when communication has shut down between ourselves and someone else. You know, for whatever reason, somebody has broken off communication. They might still be in the room. You know, they might even still be speaking to us, but we can feel that something has broken down in the communication. You know, up until that point, there was a kind of natural interchange. Like, we have this natural, open kind of communication that we actually carry out most of the time with others. You know, just even over the counter in the post office or something. You know, just what do you need? Here's what you need, you know, you need to pay me. It's just very simple. It's nothing elaborate. And yet there comes a moment where that can break down, and we feel it actually. We feel it almost immediately. You know, we said one thing, somebody thought we said another thing, and they're offended.
Right. So you have a miscommunication.
Right. We said something and somebody didn't hear it, so they don't respond to us. Whatever it is, there's a variety of ways that communication breaks down. And, maybe they're overwhelmed. And whatever we were saying makes them feel even more overwhelmed, so they just tuned us out. Let's say, for example, that's a good fundamental example to go with. Mm-hmm. That you've spoken and somebody's not responding, and there's that kind of gap where we don't understand what's going on. Usually in that moment, we feel anxious. There's a little subtle, even if it's quite subtle, there's a little feeling of being socked in the gut, and a kind of vacuum in the room that happens where we just feel very startled. Mm-hmm. You know, what should I say? You know, now what should I do? I'm not sure what's going on. Now, what most of us do out of habit that's causes trouble is that we plow forward as if it wasn't happening. You know, so we might try, if what we said overwhelmed this person, we might try saying it again. And, or saying it louder or being more elaborate with our what we're saying, you know, which makes, of course, this other person feel even more overwhelmed. So often communication shuts down even further.
Or they get defensive, perhaps.
Or, yeah, it could be defense, right? Or, you know, we could cut it off, you know, because they didn't respond. You know, we feel like, well, I'm not going to speak to this person again. Now they've offended me. Now there's a variety of things we could try to kind of seduce them into being more friendly. You know, we could tune them out. We could become angry. And all of this misses the point a bit. The reality is very simple, is that there was a communication breakdown and we felt it. You know, it's nobody's telling us what's going on. We can actually feel these things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't mean we know what's going on at some deeper level per se, but generally we're actually pretty good at figuring out that something just broke down. And just being willing to be mindful at that moment is incredibly powerful. You know, to stop the forward momentum and just be curious, just explore, like looking at this person's face. You know, if they're speaking, listening carefully to the tone of their voice, paying close attention to ourself, to our own emotions that are rising up. Maybe we do start to feel kind of anxious. Feeling that, being willing to actually let those feelings come through, because they're information. You know, they're our own sensitivity. Anyhow, I mean, I don't have to get too elaborate with the example, but in many ways, in many interactions with others, we have this kind of sensitivity that could allow us to actually slow down and become a little more careful and steer more accurately. But we have to remember to kind of let go of our patterns, our habits that we've built up over time.
Yeah, and I think it's good that you elaborated on the various things that can happen in that those few moments, because if you pause enough, then those things can happen. But if you don't know how to pause, that could be a problem too then. So I think the ability to pause is a huge component of that.
Yeah, it's very radical actually to pause. It's funny actually, in our retreats we do what we call a pause practice, where randomly we ring a chime. And, you know, usually people are in small groups or something and they're talking, and the instruction is just to stop for three breaths and nothing. You know, and just getting used to that, getting used to being interrupted by something unexpected. And then you resume. You know, it's not like you can't go on. It's just life interrupts us. And instead of that being a bad thing, which, you know, often the idea of being interrupted in communication is really upsetting, instead we could kind of reverse that tendency and feel that being interrupted could allow us to start fresh and tune in a little bit more.
Right. And a big part too is that a lot of us forget to breathe deeply. And so just that mindfulness spell is a wonderful opportunity to get back to your breath and get in touch with the here and now and your body and everything.
Absolutely. That, I think it's originally a practice from Thich Nhat Hanh, or maybe Thich Nhat Hanh adapted it. But yeah, great practice.
It is, yeah. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
Susan calls that a positive interruption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that that in communication we could have positive interruptions. And interestingly enough, when we get really fixated and stuck and kind of trapped in our habits, sometimes the best thing possible is, you know, a positive interruption of some sort. You know, suddenly a hummingbird flies by your head. You know, you're in the midst of something, you're really shut down, you're angry, you're whatever, and something just breaks you out of it. you know, it's not something you can organize or plan for, but you can go with it when it happens. It could just be the taste of your coffee. Suddenly you just, you know, you're upset, you're trying to be upset, and then suddenly you're interrupted because you realize your coffee is just so good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for an instant, you forget to be furious, and we could actually take these opportunities and go with them. Start fresh.
In terms of the mindful communication, you've mentioned already curiosity, listening, you know, giving full attention, which is also another skill, right, that you have to learn. Because that's, you know, a lot of people have a hard time listening to someone else without having agendas and, you know, maybe preparing their argument, you know, at the same time while the other person is speaking.
Right. Yeah, I would, you know, the fundamental material that's in the five keys to mindful communication covers this somewhat systematically. But essentially, you know, just being present is one whole set of skills. And then listening is one whole set of skills. You know, and there's fundamentally, there's two different ways of listening. There's, you know, kind of listening at a level of accuracy and information, you know, the content of the conversation. And then there's listening at a kind of a heart level, you know, to the emotional truth of the conversation, you know, which includes things that aren't really, you know, maybe spoken, but you can feel them as they change.
Right.
And then there's, you know, there's skills around speaking and being able to be truthful without, as Susan says, neither exaggerating nor suppressing. You know, how can we actually say true things without being harsh and without being too coy about them, you know? So there's training around all these different elements.
Is this type of training, is that something that someone would do over the course of, you know, a period of time? Or what does that look like if they wanted to train for these?
Yeah. We offer courses, you know, everything from just a, you know, a talk or, you know, for that matter, just reading the book on your own, to, you know, to longer retreats, day retreats, weekend retreats. The longest we've done has been a 5-day retreat. And, in fact, we're doing another 5-day retreat next March in Colorado. And, these are all on our website, the greenzonetalk.com. So people can check in there and they can join our newsletter if they want more information.
Great.
But they do need to be worked with. They do need to be trained with. You know, it's easy to kind of think about all this stuff, but it's harder to get it down into your bones, so to speak, so that when you're in a challenging situation, you can apply them.
Right.
That's definitely the trickier part.
So making it part of the muscle memory or a natural response that you've trained yourself in.
Exactly. And, you know, I will say absolutely that, you know, one of our fundamental trainings is mindfulness meditation. That, you know, if we can't connect with the present moment and what's arising in our senses, what's arising in our emotional faculties, what's arising in terms of our thoughts, then there's nothing to work with. You know, I mean, we have to connect with the present moment first and foremost. And any of us who've done mindfulness training know that we have to train. You know, if you don't train, you lose your acuity.
Mm-hmm.
You lose the richness of that connection that has tremendous potential if we develop it. And then, you know, if we do develop it, then you can really aim that awareness in various directions, including towards your communication.
Right. Yeah. And since we've had such a contentious election, I think a lot of people have come, maybe this is an example where you can kind of walk somebody through this. Let's say that people sit down at the table and they start talking about politics, and you've got one group that's definitely the other, you know, the on the right, and then you've got a group on the left, and typically what happens is they just, you know, something happens, and people don't talk to each other anymore. They get pretty riled up about this. Maybe you can walk somebody through that.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great topic right now. Of course, I mean, I know so many people who are deeply distraught over the level of discord in this election. You know, it's historic. I think we're living through a historic event, and a lot of us are really challenged by it. So first and foremost is just to acknowledge that, you know, we're living through this unusual election that is pushing these buttons even more than usual. But I would say, you know, I would use one of our fundamental metaphors in mindful communication, which is the traffic light. And we use a traffic light because it's so simple. And it's very basic. It's actually, you can actually teach this material to children because it's so easy. And that's helpful. So it seems simplistic at first, but the traffic light is good because when we get upset, we get a bit simplistic. Mm-hmm. The more upset we are, the more childlike we actually are, not necessarily in a positive direction, you know. So no. We get a little more, we lose our intelligence and our sophistication. So I bring this up in light of that it's actually useful because it's so simple. And what happens in, you know, say talking about this election, if you run into people who have different views than yourself, is that there's this, you know, we're already carrying around an anxiety about, you know, the state of the world, the state of the nation, our place in that, our future security and freedom and sense of connectedness to the, you know, to the culture in the United States, let's say. And so there's already a bit of anxiety, which in the traffic light metaphor, when we're open and connected and connected, you know, with ourself, which automatically connects us to others. As soon as we're really connected to ourself, we already are in the room. We're already realize that we're interacting with our environment, even when we're alone, not to mention that when we're with others. But as our anxiety level rises, it takes us out of the green light state of openness into the yellow light state. And the yellow light state is very much connected to fear and uncertainty and confusion. Like, I don't know what's happening. What is going on? For God's sake, I don't understand, you know, that kind of feeling. And when we enter the yellow light state, it's a different world. We're suddenly living in a different world than we were just a minute before when we were feeling very connected. We've entered into a situation where, we can't handle as much as we could a minute ago. You know, we become in some ways very weakened, and you know, our sophistication and all of our, you know, big theories about the world, or you know, the way we want to be as a human being in the world, they get scaled way back. And we get into a kind of a fight or flight sensibility. Mm-hmm. And we need to recognize this when it happens. You know, politics triggers this in us. Yeah. Because, you know, the stakes are high, and you know, we have these big concerns, and there's moral issues that really touch us at a deep heart level. And suddenly we're facing somebody who doesn't share maybe that same morality. Maybe they have a different morality that we don't share. You know, we don't understand it. And so we're in the yellow light, usually already, just to find out that somebody has a different view than us. A lot of us find that pretty threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we're in the yellow light, we're already feeling quite overwhelmed. And so the thing that we don't want to do is to try and, you know, we don't want to absorb far more information than we already have. We're already overwhelmed. We don't want to take on an even bigger task right at that moment, because we've gotten a little disconnected from ourselves. You know, we start to lose touch with our heart. We start to lose touch with our senses. You know, it's when we go into our head and stop paying attention to the room and to the feeling in our body, basic truths, you know. We stop, you know, seeing what our eyes are actually seeing in the room because we're living in our minds.
Right.
Things like that. We're starting to, you know, worry and go off into the future. Well, what if this political situation happens? You know, that could be tragic or whatever. So because we're a little disconnected due to our anxiety, we just have to realize we're a little more limited right in that moment. We actually need to reconnect. That's our top priority, is to reconnect. Our top priority is not to, you know, continue the discussion we're in. It's not to try and get some opinion down somebody else's throat, you know, or to sit through a discussion that for whatever reason, we just don't feel like we can tolerate right in that moment. We actually need to protect ourselves a little bit. It's nobody's fault. You know, it's not the fault of the other person. It's not the fault of any political party or something. We have become disconnected from our own mind and heart a little bit. It's not even our fault. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what do we do? And what we need to do is to be a little bit protective and kind of get ourselves to a safer space. Whatever that means, it may mean literally saying, you know, opting out of the conversation, saying, you know, I'm sorry, I'm a little overwhelmed and I need to just opt out, you know, please continue, you know, without me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may mean just saying like, I, you know, if we're there and we can't leave, you know, just, I'm not doing very well. And I don't know that I can continue talking about this right now. Whatever it is, we need to kind of reconnect. Once we reconnect, once we are able to get back to the present moment, reconnect to our senses, to our heart, to the intelligence that we actually carry as human beings, then we can have any kind of sophisticated political conversation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to recognize that we go in and out of this, you know. Anxiety may bring us to a certain state where we're not going to make a lot of progress until we soothe ourselves, calm down, and reconnect. That's the important part. And that others are going through this as well. So, you know, driving somebody into a state of anxiety, again, it's nobody's fault maybe, but if they're in a higher and higher state of anxiety, the conversation is not going to be that fruitful.
No, it's only going to escalate and get more reactive and reactionary.
Exactly. And what we don't want is to progress up to what's called the red light. And the red light is when we fully shut down. So, you know, the yellow light, we're sort of in between. We're fearful, we're getting disconnected, but we haven't really gone for it. But the red light is when we tip into fully shutting down. And, you know, so that's when we just lash out, or, you know, that's when we just go silent and, you know, give somebody the silent treatment, you know. Or again, you know, it can take different forms. It could be arrogance, or, you know, competitiveness, hyper-competitiveness, like I'm going to win this conversation no matter what. I don't care what's true anymore. You know, I just want to win, that kind of thing.
Right.
And these are habits, you know, again, it's nobody's fault, but, you know, we carry them out because we're afraid, essentially, and we've run away from our own fear into this kind of shutdown red light state. And, you know, and that's really where that's where more harm can happen, both to ourselves and to others. And we just don't want to do that. We really want to find our way back out. So instead of, you know, pushing ourselves so hard that we shut down, we just need to naturally recognize our limits, pull back a little bit. We might even be able to continue the conversation if we pull back a little bit. You know, maybe just a few minutes break, just stopping to go get some more, you know, snacks or something
mm-hmm.
at a holiday party or something allows us to reconnect a little bit, and then we could actually say what we really mean rather than just having things come out of our mouth that we don't mean.
Right. And continuing to see each other's humanity, common ground rather than...
Yeah.
Some of these conversations, from what I hear, people end up completely alienated from each other
right.
and never wanting to see each other again. And that's really sad.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, the worst part about that, from my point of view, is that we then don't understand what is going on with this other person. You know, if we'd been able to slow down, step back a little bit, and allow the conversation to progress in a more, you know, human level, instead of trying to win, instead of trying to prove that this person is morally bankrupt or something, you know, we could actually have been said, well, what can you say more about what you do believe? Like, tell me more about your world. And that's how we do break down those barriers. You know, that's where instead of the world progressing into a kind of red light state where suddenly there's whole groups of people that are considered kind of inhuman,
mm-hmm.
you know, those people on the other side who I don't even think of them as human beings anymore. Instead, we realize that shared humanity, like you were saying, and then we go, okay, well, I don't really agree with them, but I understand what they're thinking. You know, I talked to this one person, and this person told me, you know, this is their view of the world and whatever. And even if you think they're wrong, even if you want to, you know, politically, you want your candidate to win and theirs to lose, and you think that's good, you know, like I like my candidate's policies better, whatever, that's fine, you know. Even then, you need to kind of understand who you're up against and what they're into, how they see things.
All right.
So it's effective. It's not just, you know, ideological. It's not just being compassionate or something in a moral way. It's like, well, even if you want to get things done, you need to know the world that you're trying to get things done in.
Right. Yeah, and I think even in Congress, the complete...
The failure of communication across the aisles, yeah.
And how it's turned into a standstill. It looks like in a lot of different situations is learning to be more mindful and communicate better would have a lot of fruit and benefit.
Absolutely. It's funny. I saw an article recently on that really charted it across decades and how fractured it's become now. And that's, you know, in terms of the, you know, Republicans and the Democrats no longer being able to work with each other. And it's, you know, you look back 50 years and it was really a different world. And that's where you see actually that our own troubles and habits around communication breaking down, they turn into world history. You know what I mean? It's exactly the same as what's going on in us, but it's a bunch of people. They happen to be in Congress or wherever, you know, in whatever governmental body, wherever in the world. you know, or they're in armies, you know, or whatever, you know, city hall, it doesn't matter, that they have the same trouble we do, and that when they shut down into the red light, you know, suddenly if that's the wrong person shutting down, you've got a war, and 100,000 people die because of that one moment of shutdown. You know, it's that simple in a way. It comes down to one moment where somebody said, I'm not going to connect with my experience. I'm going to turn somebody into a, you know, into an object. I'm going to objectify this other, maybe this whole country. And then now we can attack them. But it's no different than our own experience.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an important practice. And I imagine you deal with a lot of marital type relationship.
Sure.
Because it's the same thing. It comes up
exactly
just like that.
Exactly. That's a, you know, that's a particularly interesting one because, you know, here's somebody who we're so close to, you know, intimate relationships. We're so close that the irony is that we feel every little grain of disagreement, you know, as if they were like little bits of sand that, you know, if you weren't absolutely pressed up against each other, you wouldn't feel a little grain of sand. But because you are, every little bit can become, you know, some huge drama, some huge disagreement. And, you know, it's only because we're so invested and we're so close that that's the case. You know, which is, you know, kind of a bit of an unfair way to judge our relationships. You know, here's this other person, they're doing their best, we're doing our best. And yet, you know, we're judging it by this very extreme standard.
And so are your retreats emphasizing, are they specific couple type retreats, or do you have, you know, a variety of retreats that address different situations?
Yeah, we have a number of retreats. The one that's really focused on relationships is called the Four Seasons of Relationship. And this looks at the cycles that relationships go through in terms of every relationship is like a year in the sense that, you know, we start out alone and then we go into a kind of springtime where there's a courtship that happens. You know, we meet somebody and you start to assess whether there's a connection, you know, and then if there is a connection, you continue through into the summer. And summer is this sense of deepening the connection and committing to the connection. And, you know, sort of even, you know, to the point of making vows to each other in whatever sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's literal vows or just sort of, you know, understandings, coming to understandings about what the nature of the connection is. And then, you know, at some point, even if it's just over the course of a whole human life, you know, where there's, of course, we're going to die at the end of our lives, you know, there's a coming apart, or it could be a breakup or whatever it is. There's a natural point of where the connection has to come apart. And this is true even for ongoing relationships, that we could recognize that even walking into a room with somebody in the morning, we go through these seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were alone and we walk in to have breakfast or something. And there's that meeting point where we come together and begin a conversation or whatever it is. And then there's the full, you know, breakfast time where we're really deeply engaging. And then there's maybe time to split off and go in different directions for the day. So this four-season cycle is you know, happens in a lot of ways. And it's not even just romantic relationships. It could be somebody you meet on the bus and have a conversation with. So that retreat covers that material. We have a whole retreat about conflict and the four stages of escalation into conflict and how to undo each of those four stages. We have a whole relationship on, or a whole retreat on the chemistry of emotions, how the emotions manifest in the three different traffic lights, you know, sort of open emotions, the yellow light emotions of fear and anxiety, and then the shutdown emotions of the red light. And we have a retreat that's all about, it's called The Stories of Our Lives, that's all about looking back at our life story and reimagining, or not reimagining, but sort of reconfiguring our life story, telling it in different ways in order to, cut through the kind of complaint a lot of us have about our lives. You know, my life should have gone a certain way and instead it went a different way. And to actually look at our lives and say, ah, you know, this is a hero's journey,
mm-hmm.
in which there are, you know, tragic moments and disappointments. You know, it's a bit like an opera or something like that. You know, but it's a spiritual journey in some sense. We're going through a lot of experiences, some of which are quite painful, in order to live a heroic life.
So the retreat helps you to learn to appreciate things that you formerly didn't really appreciate.
Exactly.
About your life. And
yeah. That's it. I mean, you know, recognizing that our lives are rich. They're not necessarily a vacation.
You know, right.
They're not for sissies, so to speak. You know, life can be quite intense. And yet we could really view it as a powerful experience, you know, including all the troubles we've had.
Mm-hmm.
Those could all be crucial parts of the story.
That sounds great. And then the book that you mentioned, maybe you mentioned that, can mention that one more time. So folks
sure.
who are interested can follow up and learn more about this practice.
Yeah, it's the 5 Keys to Mindful Communication from Shambhala Publications by Susan Gillis Chapman. And actually, there's going to be another book coming here soon that's getting worked on. So there'll be a workbook that's on its way, hopefully in the next year.
Great. People can actually do some homework and implement it.
Exactly. Yeah, hopefully it'll because a lot of people are, you know, interested in doing that, and this will make that more explicit and give you more of a path to travel through the material.
Yeah, that's great. That's what we're all about, is applied meditation, bringing it into our daily lives. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, it's been great to talk with you and learn from you.
Yes, well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Craig. I hope you enjoyed this. And of course, as always, please feel free to leave comments or further questions, follow-up questions about this particular episode with Craig Heffron, or if you have any other questions about communications or speech, or if you would like to see another episode about this particular topic. You can find this episode online with the show notes and the links by going to meditationfreedom.com/48. So with that, I hope you have a wonderful practice going on, and feel free to let me know how your practice is going. Thank you, and take care.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Meditation Freedom Podcast, where meditation meets daily life.